This meeting is now being recorded.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all, and welcome to the new GPLD Subsequent Procedures Track 14 call on the 17th of August, 2017. On the call today, we do have Ann Aikman-Scalise, Cheryl Langdon-Orr, Nathaniel Edwards, Rubens Kuhl, and Victor Zhang. We do have apologies from Dietmar Linden. From staff, we have Julie Hedlund, Steve Chan, Emily Barabas, and myself, Michelle B. Snyder. As a reminder, to state your name before speaking for recording purposes, and I'd like to turn the call back over to Cheryl Langdon-Orr.
Thank you very much, Cheryl Langdon-Orr, here, and for whatever reason, I now have call waiting, which I will deal with in a moment. Just hopefully they'll give up and go away. My apologies for the beeping noise from my line. I also note that we have an unidentified phone number as well, so whoever is the number ending in 6882 could let themselves be known to Michelle or just in chat. That means we will appropriately list you as an attendee for today's call. Today, first of all, let me go down on bended knee virtually. Obviously, if I went down really, I'd never get back up again. And apologise to you all for the delay that has happened in getting out agendas and so forth for this today's call. I do know it's important, as does Rubens, for all of you to have as much advance notice as possible on agendas and obviously to see any text that we may be discussing. So I am going to ask and indeed beg your forgiveness. Real life has got in our way, and if anyone wants to be bored by all sorts of gory medical details as to why this is the case from my perspective, I'll take it as a private conversation. But suffice it to say, real sorry, it should hopefully not happen again, and if it does, it'll be for good reason. With that, let's move to the next slide, please, and probably move to the one after that. So we've done our welcome and opening remarks. We're about to call for SOI updates, but I suppose it is appropriate that we remind everybody that, as ever, if there has been a change to their statement of interest, particularly with anything that would reflect on the work that they are doing and their role in this work team, that they should let us know and update their SOI. We will be going through applicant evaluation issues today and also some of the uncategorised issues out of the CC2, and we have, I think, an intention to try and start narrowing down on some of the where do we as a group believe we are up to on a number of points. I also would like to mention that if you have any problems with any audio, please just let us know in chat. Both Rubens and I from time to time do have funny audio bits, but we do want to try and make sure that we are as clear as we possibly can be during these calls. Nobody put their hand up when I called for SOI updates, so I'm going to assume that there are none. We're not going to take the time for a full work cross-community working group update beyond perhaps asking Steve if there is anything he'd like to briefly tell us about next dates, etc. So perhaps, Steve, if you could take a moment or two in the absence of both Jeff and Avery, just to make sure the group knows when the next full plenary meetings are and if anything of significance to us happened in the last one, that'd be great. Over to you, Steve.
Sure. Thanks, Cheryl. This is Steve from staff. So briefly, the last call touched on the efforts of two of the drafting teams. One was around the quote-unquote rounds, or which might be something like first come, first served, or whatever the mechanism might end up being. The other topic that was covered was the predictability framework. And then finally, some discussion and update on the Work Track 5 update or geographic names at the top level. We'll be skipping next week for the full group. The next meeting is, let me check the date real quick, I think 28 August. And I think that's it. That's just, as Cheryl said, a very brief update in Arvind Jeff's absence. Thanks.
Cheryl, for the record, and thanks very much for that, Steve. I heard you do that in another work team, so I knew you had it off pat. It wasn't going to be an impost to ask you to hop in and do that. If we can move through the next slide and to the following one labelled 3, we'll now move straight into the discussion of applicant evaluation. And as I hand over to Rubens to take us through this, that's perfect. If I can, as I say, beg all of your forgiveness for not having had these slides out in advance. Let's all work together and see where we can get through today's call. I would also suggest that being such a small group, obviously do put up your hand if you want to make an intervention, but if you're desperate, I'm quite sure if you just make yourself known going or wanting to say something, we'll be able to manage the queue that way as well. Over to you, Rubens. If you're speaking, Rubens, we're not hearing you. You might be muted.
Yes, I was muted. Haha. That was about to happen someday. This was the day. Rubens, still for the record, we'll be going through starting at slide 5, which describes where we at least in our perception, so we can gauge or common perception. We have already concluded on a principle, on some principles like technical evaluation to be done aggregated. With or without an registry service provider program, which from now on I will only mention as RSP. The same happens to financial evaluation. Most people seem inclined for that to be aggregated as well, despite some few comments again. So in those comments were some that preferred not to, but in aggregate, they didn't build up to breaking a perception of consensus. So far, we still be going for the principle that financial evaluation is something to be aggregated. And also, Anne has her hand raised, and please go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Rubens. It's Anne Aikman-Scalise for the transcript. My recollection regarding financial evaluation to be aggregated by registry operator, I assume the RO stands for, is I remember talking about how this would be subject to that consideration, not putting certain applicants ahead of other applicants in the queue, how to deal with the order of consideration and processing of an application, because it's one registry operator who's being evaluated shouldn't mean that all of their applications suddenly come to the front. So can you remind me what was the consensus in relation to the issue of the order of consideration of application?
What we talked about when we mentioned ordering, that it was not something that is in scope for WorkTrack 4, because that's like sitting or procedure and something that are in scope for other WorkTracks. And they are not directly related to ordering, because even if evaluation is done somewhat in aggregate, the public publication of the evaluation results still could be done either in one batch or phased or something that's not in discussion in WorkTrack 4. So whether you have the same bingo cards or raffle for ordering and what will be their impact is currently being discussed in other work tracks. So what we need to deliver is the substance of how it should be done. On whether it impacts some priorities, that's also a relevant question. It is a question for the subsequent procedures work group, just not for work track 4. That's where we were, and I think we are at the same point. Does that answer?
I just think that if we're doing this as a presentation of, you know, where we are, we need to note that that's subject to consideration of by the plenary on the order of consideration of applications or some such language, just something that there's a fairness issue here. There is a fairness issue.
Mm-hmm. Yes, not only the plenary.
I'm sorry, Ruben, this is Dan. We lost you.
Have we lost the connection with Ruben? Michelle, can you check on that, please? Cheryl here.
Absolutely. It looks like he's still connected, but I'll check his line.
It's Anne again.
Thank you.
Cheryl, if I may. Steve made a really good comment in the chat, which I think it would be easy to deal with because all we would have to say is, you know, subject to consideration by Work Track 1 of the order of evaluation.
Cheryl here. Thanks, Anne. I think that's a very valuable edit that we can make. So if I can second guess Ruben's on this, I'm going to say yes, let's make it so.
Thank you, Cheryl.
No problem. Is there anything else, Anne?
Coming up mute. Thank you, Cheryl.
No, but your hand's still up. I thought you might have another point. Right. It's just you proving that you are, in fact, an old hand. Have we got Ruben's back on audio yet? Okay. Work in progress. Gremlins in the telecommunications world. What a shock. Okay, it is Ruben's connected by phone bridge as well as via the AC. Odd if it's both have gone down only at the one time. Okay, so if I may then just continue with the slide, Cheryl, for the record. With where we are now, I'm certainly concerned, and I suspect Ruben is as well, that we have more than just the heroic few that regularly turn up to our meetings.
have at least the opportunity to have input into our sets of assumptions and possible texts. So at the close of this meeting, I think one of the action items will be to request to the list that they do take the time to have a look at today's slides and make some comments if and where necessary to what we are saying and any notes from today's meeting. Now, it looks like there's a little green arrow next to Ruben's phone. Does that mean we're dialing him again, Michelle? Are we getting any there, where, or not?
I have him leave the Adobe Connect room and see if we can get a better connection. Here he is. Let's see. But for some reason, his audio is not connecting on his phone. Ruben, can you hear us?
Okay. Rubens, can you do an audio check, please? All right, well, while we work on that, I guess we'll just have to continue on in a brave manner and hope that he's at least able to hear us and will be able to type at us if we're going so far off track. So one of the, and I am now going to paraphrase what is on the slide in front of us, one of the things that has been discussed at some of our face-to-face presentations within the GNSO and within the plenary has been the question of an overhaul to the financial questions. The issues here, of course, we don't want to get into a some sort of recursive loop thing, because if we overhaul the expected questions, then obviously recommendations we're making on the existing questions may become moot. So recognising that, we still have to do our best. One of the things I would like you to do as a group now is think that it would be a wise move to do as suggested on this slide, and that is to develop a straw person, preferably that has taken into consideration any of the comments in CC1 and indeed CC2, or should I say CC2 and indeed CC1, which at the moment is characterised in this slide as start from scratch. We still, I think, need to have, and I'm sure Rubens would agree, text for people to react to. And to that end, we may have to take one of our meetings in the near future to, with our small group here, do a little bit of think tank drafting on such a straw person. That's one way forward. If any of you have other ways forward, please do suggest them in the chat. But that's certainly, I think, one of the ways I would suggest we might do that. Put up the questions, both why not technical and financial, but certainly financial, where we know there's probably going to be some edits needing to be made, and workshop them with the purpose of not getting a perfect endgame text, but at least a straw person that we can get wider input and reactions to. I'm now going to stop momentarily and see whether we have Ruben back on audio.
This is Michelle, Cheryl. Not quite yet. I actually gave him the phone number to dial in because the...
Okay. All right. Well, then I'm going to move on to our next dot point. In fact, not to the next dot point, but I'm going to jump to the question of scaling. The question of scaling has been a matter that has been an issue raised in a number of the work tracks. We do know that we are hopeful that some review of the best guesstimate of the maximum number of names that can go into root in any calendar year can be modified. But of course, scaling goes beyond that. There is also a high number of applications. The mere practicality of assessing, effectively assessing and efficiently assessing the responses to the questions, both technical and finance, certainly have to be scaled as well. So we shouldn't lose sight of that. But I wondered if any of you had a particular comment or suggestion on what we should say, if anything, on that matter at this stage. So briefly stop for any queuing or comment to come in on that. And we have Rubens on audio, which is most important. I don't see anybody waving frantically at us, Ruben, so I'm going to hand back over to you. I've made a terrible hash of your beautifully set out bullet points, but I do think we're probably close to the end of the slide shown, looking now at the matter of scaling, although I didn't look at the CQs and the answers, so you might want to go back to that. Thanks. Over to you.
Thank you, Cheryl. Can you hear me now? Just to confirm it.
Perfectly.
Thank you, Cheryl. Ruben's here for the record. About the CQs, which is only bullet point that wasn't addressed so far, we asked ICANN staff for the detailed clarification questions and answers to those clarification questions. In the questions that were, the answers were publicly listed, that were published. Staff already provided us an answer that seems to be in favor of providing it to us, which is nice since it saves us from writing a DIDP to get that information. But they said that it will take time. So we might have to wait a while for those specifics, but that only matters in things where we're keeping the questions, when we think that keeping the questions similar to what they were means is a good approach. So for the other questions, if we go a different approach than looking at what happened in the previous round doesn't do much. But for technical questions, it probably goes so. So we can go to slide 6 and start with an easy thing, which are the non-scored questions. So the questions that don't receive either a 1, 0, or 2 score. And the question is whether this non-scored question should be achieved for our work track. Because most of these questions related to how the TLD is used, is deployed, is used by the applicant. So most of them were basis for objections, for some advices, either pro or against some applications, but they were not pass or fail questions. They were not scored at all. Those answers were not enforceable by the agreement unless an applicant made a specific voluntary public interest commitment, a PIC, to cover them. Some did, but most of them did not, and could be changed during the application process, but then reported to ICANN, say, hey, I need to do an application change request because this or that has changed, or after contracting. So if you started a TLD, for instance, like .security. .security was an application for brand TLD. and then it was acquired and repurposed as a general TLD. So that can happen, and there's nothing that prohibits either a registry or a successor registry from changing the purpose of a TLD. So the question is that a team for WorkTrack 4? So the only straw person, and this straw person is just from out of my head, not from any other person in the work group leadership or any other work track person, just represent a starting point. Should we forward them all to work track 2 and say, hey, this relates to objections and so forth. So should we just say, hey, take care of those and see if you need them. If you don't need that, just throw them away. If you do need them, keep them and take good care of them. So the idea here is to, in these meetings, to not decide anything, but we would like to feel the temperature. So, if someone in the work track thinks that this is unwise, that we should address it, or think that this is okay. Any takers?
Cheryl, it's Anne. I'm sorry, but I was frozen out of Adobe Connect, but maybe it's my internet. I'm going to have to come back in. I wasn't able to ask a question in the chat. But it's Anne again for the transcript. My question is, are we talking about whether or not WorkTrack 4 should consider the issue of whether an applicant can change the purpose of the TLD and under what circumstances? And does this all relate to question 18 that was referred to in the 2012 round? I'm not sure I completely follow what Ruben's saying.
Yes. And if I may, that's mostly related to question 18, which is one of the non-scored questions.
And is the question whether that it's within the scope of, excuse me, Anne again, thank you, Ruben. Is the question whether it's within the scope of WorkTrack 4 to consider whether an applicant can freely change the purpose of the TLD after contracting or after applying? Or is it a question of the scope of WorkTrack 4, or is it a question on the merits?
Question of scope of WorkTrack 4. But just for clarity's sake, I believe it's currently listed as a WorkTrack 4 item. So if we think, yeah, if we think that it's not, and that's the proposal on the table, we need to explicitly ask the work group leadership and say, hey, this probably belongs better with the work track that is going through objections and advice. So we can't say now that it's not in our table. What we can say is that it shouldn't be. So that's
I see. Thank you, Ruben. To Dan again, was it assigned to us? I'm trying to figure out why.
If we go to Steve Rubens, I'm sure he'll tell us why we've got this little outlier. Go ahead, Steve.
Yes, Steve probably have a better answer.
We'll see. Thanks, Cheryl. Thanks, Ruben. This is Steve from staff. The topic of, let's say, question 18, but I guess more broadly, the representations of applicants made in their applications and how those are ultimately integrated into the registry agreement, that topic was brought up by the discussion group. So it is captured in the issue report, and to the extent it was classified correctly, I'm not sure that that's necessarily it was put in the right place, but it's actually captured under contractual compliance, which is actually already under WorkTrack 2. So if we do want to forward it to them, it's actually potentially already within their scope of consideration. But as Ruben said, maybe it has a home within Work Track 3 as well, if it relates to, actually, I take that back. So I think public interest commitments are also Work Track 2. So I think it probably does make sense at Work Track 2 if we are trying to forward this to a different Work Track. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve. Just to be clear that it has two discussion topics. One is whether the commitments make into the register agreement and whether it makes into the objection process. So they're two different topics, but I believe they are being addressed by the same work track. So it seems that nobody's complaining of getting less work and pushing more work towards others. Someone might, but we won't. So we can move to the next slide, which is slide 7. First of a few slides regarding technical questions, but I was going to start and then and raise her hand. Please go ahead then.
Yeah, just Dan again, very quickly. I think objections are work track 3, maybe. They're probably what Steve said about work track 2 makes sense for the question 18 question, because I think that the objection process is not really, you know, about contractual compliance with, for example, eligibility requirements. Eligibility requirements in relation to a certain top-level domain, if the purpose of the top-level is domain is changed from the application, it could affect eligibility requirements, which would probably be more of a, you know, contractual compliance issue than an objection issue, because I think the objection issue is based on the original application, I believe. But maybe it belongs in both of them. I don't know. But I at least agree with Steve's observation about Work Track 2. Thank you.
Thanks, and just agreed to share our lack of knowledge in whether it belongs to which Work Track and leave that to others then. So moving to technical questions, this is a series of slides whether we have at least three different views from technical questions. One is from the programming view from 2016. And while they made some more detailed suggestions, their main suggestions were to consider whether an alternative approach to the technical and operational evaluation capability would be worthwhile, and to review technical and operational capability keys and skills and responses to determine whether improvements to the application questions can be made. The first one is mostly what we are trying to address with the RSP program. It also can be addressed by aggregating the evaluation, which can be done without the RSP program. So this should, for completeness, it should list both RSP program and aggregated evaluation. And it seems we all agree. So it seems we are converging with staff suggested regarding this this concept. There's also suggested to review technical and operational skills and responses, and guess what? We already requested that exactly that same information. It will take time for them to answer, but one of the issues we need to be vigilant of is that we won't get all of the skills, only the ones that are public of published responses. And one of the questions with large number of CQs was exactly one of the questions regarding security policy. And we won't get those clarifying questions. And that's a good thing that we won't have that information, because that is privileged and sensitive information. And one of the main questions among applicants is, can I really give that critical information to ICANN? Some of them actually responded to ICANN, some of them possibly made up something just to send to registries. And one of the questions that I want to leave on the table is that reasonable information to ask, what should be the boundaries regarding information that is so critical that companies won't give you the real information and will just fabricate something for delight of evaluators. But that's only a question. That's only something noting that we have an issue here regarding sensitive technical information, and we probably need to go back to that. So if someone has an idea, please come forward with that. If someone later thinks on something, please send that to the list. So you just need to mark it down for now as pending, as not having even an idea or principle or straw man. This is something that needs to be addressed later on. So we can move to the next slide. Title of the slide is Technical Questions, ICANN Technical Services Feedback. This is something that we got recently from ICANN Technical Services, and they bundled many recommendations regarding both RSP programs, RSP program, pre-delegation testing, and application evaluation. So they made 11 recommendations. We are grateful for the feedback on that. We'll come back to RSPs and PDTs at later time. But they had one recommendation regarding application evaluation about questions that have a score of 0, 1, or 2. There were some questions, both in technical evaluation and financial evaluation, that had this possibility. And this, an applicant was required to have some questions with 2 points score, but if the applicant only got 1 point in one score, it could get 2 points in other questions. And they're suggesting that this is eliminated, and only question only evaluates whether an applicant fits criteria, fits minimum criteria. If it fits, then it fits. Most of the inconsistencies in application results were in those questions, because if it can be 0 or 1, an evaluator can look, oh, if I give a 0, that will fail the application. So is this infrastructure so bad, so lousy, that need to be reproved, not approved? But if it's 0, 1, or 2, then, oh, it's okay, or it's similar. It's more of a subjective criteria. So their suggestion is to remove that possibility. And for me, it seems non-controversial. It seems that most people would agree. And it addresses the main technical question that had issues besides the security policy question that I mentioned in the previous slides. Because it was a question about high availability and scalability. And one of the questions inside question 32 was, oh, how geographic dispersed is your infrastructure? And some could see some kilometers as
enough
distance, and some would require, some people would say, no, you have to have infrastructure in different continents to be as diverse as necessary. So this is a question that had many discrepancies for same backend having two different grades, two different scores. And this would be automatically solved by ICANN staff suggestion. So the temperature filling question here is, does anybody disagree with their suggestion? Going once, going twice, and it's typing and wait for her to end the type. Why when things on this question, we can move to slide 9, which is about registry services, which was a way used to collect information that ICANN would later use to build Exhibit A. Exhibit A is a part of the agreement that is approved service. It has some basic services like DNS publishing and who is publishing, and some services that are required, and could have some other services. So it was a point that applicants could differentiate themselves and ask for different services to be added. This was somewhat useful along with technical evaluation. So if someone was suggesting a service that would require some specific infrastructure, that could be addressed also in technical evaluation. But when technical evaluation is done aggregated in book or not done at all in a registered service provider program, it becomes somewhat less useful. Not completely out of use, but less useful. There are discussions among registries that will later forward them to ICANN with some suggestions to streamline contract management of approved registry services. That includes some ideas like free to deploy services, which would be pre-approved, like IDN languages or protected marks list or book transfer, some common services that are used by many registries. All those requests have been approved by ICANN for more than 10 years, 15 years, so no reason to deny that service to a specific registry. And combining those free-to-deploy services and new services that don't require contract amendments, that could streamline this process during contract maintenance and diminish the need for having it at application time. So the stop person here is to an application to not specify any additional registry services. If some applicant wants some different registry services, it could do an RCEP either after contracting or at contracting. Say, I only want to sign a contract with if I can get these and these and these services. If not, I don't want the contract. So this would streamline the application because registry services would be evaluated at all, at least for registries wanting the vanilla services that covers most brand and open CLDs. Anna, please go ahead.
Yes. Thank you very much, Ruben, to Anne again. And I I don't agree with this, if I understand it correctly, because one of the big, the big rationale for unlimited top-level domains was innovation in the marketplace, new creative approaches, and, models in the operation of registries that could be, new paradigms, new services provided on a competitive basis in the marketplace. If I understand this correctly, we're saying that the straw person is that you could not specify a different and new registry service in your application, that you would only have certain additional registry services that you're allowed to specify, and then if you want to propose something else, you have to wait until the phase of contract negotiation. And I don't agree at all that that's appropriate in relation to, the whole purpose of the GTLD program, which was innovation and creativity.
Mm-hmm. Do you remind any application where such proposed services were then integrated into the agreement?
Well, I know there's a question in the chat related to DPML and GPML. I, as far as, additional services being rendered, I just think that that is an essential part of what we're talking about as the fundamental rationale for the new GTLD program. If you can't propose additional services, that limits innovation and creativity from the get-go.
No. The point here is whether that creativity and innovation actually happen and actually needed evaluation at application time. So it's different saying that application wouldn't allow new registry service to be specified, then a new registry service won't be allowed. So it's a fine, subtle difference between those two. And note that while you mentioned protected marks list, one of the ideas is to incorporate all the mostly common registry services as pre-approved, and those would already be allowed because they are already on the free-to-deploy list. For instance, most applicants have not specified book transfer portfolios after partial portfolio acquisitions as a service, and most of them are adding that now, but this is a service that was already added in most GTLD agreements so far. So even some little scopes in innovation usually ended up being forks of already applying products. So the question then becomes how we can both streamline the application evaluation and not deter innovation. Because if you do something that has a negative impact on possible innovations, that's a bad thing, even if streamline the process. But then we see that the goal is how to not be something in the way of innovation if someone happens to have an innovative idea. Cheryl would like to talk a bit more in this topic, like you put in the chat.
Cheryl here, Rubens. I was simply saying in the chat that while I agree in a personal capacity with what Anna's saying about innovation and the purpose of the new GTLD program, to me what you were saying is the critical thing we need to decide upon, and that is does such planned innovation need to be evaluated and indeed locked down in any way, shape or form as a key issue at application? And there could be, in my view at least, a strong argument for people not to put their innovations up front at the application stage, let alone to allow for the flexibility. So that was the only point I was trying to make. If I wasn't very clear, that doesn't surprise me, actually. Thanks, Ruben.
Hi, Anne, please go ahead, Anne.
Yes, thank you, Ruben. It's Anne again. I want to give an example that is sort of maybe counterintuitive. This could also affect the objections process, because we have deadlines on objections, and a registry could offer a service that they believe is innovative, but wait until after they've been awarded the TLD and then put in something that they want to offer as a quote-unquote service, to which some members of the community might object. And so I'll give you an example that is one that I'll raise personally, maybe not even, you know, I would just have to say nothing about this has been discussed in relation to IPC specifically. But what if a registry wants to offer a service of a registry of famous marks? Well, that has been through the process of rights protection mechanisms. And if a registry starts up and says, and oh, by the way, you know, here's what we're going to do for famous marks. I mean, somebody might have an objection to that. And so I don't think that we should assume that, you know, all these services that are going to be proposed at the contracting phase will be neutral in nature. And I definitely think that proposed registry services need to appear in the original application in order to be properly evaluated for many purposes, including objections. Thank you.
Hi, Anne. I have a follow-up question on your comment, Anne. What prevents someone from previous round to do exactly what you feared, because they haven't added that in their application, but they will now add it as a new registry service. So whether this actually blocks any bad intention from actually happening, because if someone wants to try to get away with it, what's the better way is to not put in the application, because the applicant is not required to define the application. All the registry services that will be provided by DTLD for the life of the contract. So if the question is not about checking whether some bright idea but hasn't any intention to hide that from the community. That was the only issue that having the register in the application would have served the purpose, because then that applicant would be almost a public comment of their idea and see what happens, see what the community thinks. But if an applicant deliberately wants some registry service to not be evaluated in application, and leave that for the later process. That's how history can. So, what you are trying to address here?
Yeah, thanks, Ruben. It's Anne again. I understand that there's concern about streamlining applications, and I'm assuming it's because we anticipate volume and it's hard for staff to process, you know, the evaluations quickly and that kind of thing. Well, obviously, if all of the services that are being offered are pre-approved services until a later time, that may help with how quickly, you know, applications come to the fore and TLDs are actually launched, and I realize that. But I think it's really putting a kibosh on creativity in the sense that you're saying that all the new registry services that might be proposed are delayed for later consideration at the contracting phase. And so, you know, that I think is anti, you know, creativity, anti-innovation, and I strongly disagree with this straw person language. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne. Just one comment that trying to streamline the application evaluation is not only due to scale, it's also due to cost. So for underserved regions, the current application cost is very high, and anything that can be done to reduce that cost without jeopardizing the program objectives is also something beneficial, even if only have 200 applications or 20 applications. So it's not only related to scale. Scale is a concern. Scale is a concern that I mentioned, but it's not only that. But considering 3 minutes before time, I think we should end by this topic, and let Cheryl go with the session. Thank you all.
Thank you, Rubens, and thank you, Anne, and everyone for very important discussions today, Cheryl, for the record. While we were having our gremlin problems, I did suggest that we need to send a note to the list noting that our discussion in these slides matched with the notes from this meeting, went as far as this, slide 9 in the 13th set today, and encourage our full list to comment, interact, and make any edits and contributions to what we've discussed known in the list between now and our next meeting. I would suggest then, Rubens, that what we probably do is pick up at this point on slide 9, at the end of slide 9, in terms of discussion of the straw person. We've certainly heard Anne's objection to that language. There may be some modification of the language suggested between now and our next meeting. I sincerely hope there is. And to that end, I think this is an appropriate starting point for our next agenda. So with that plan and an action item on us all to make some on-list interactions about this topic, we'll wrap this call up now and note that if memory serves correctly, our next work track for call will be on, I believe, the 31st of August at, I'm going to say 1500 UTC. Staff, I'm quite sure you're going to correct me if I'm wrong or confirm if I'm right. And with that confirmation hopefully appearing somewhere in chat, and if not, certainly in the notes from today's call that go out to you all. Thank you, one and all. We are progressing, and we will get there in the end, especially if we keep some intersessional work done happening on the list. With that, I would like to bring this call to a close with the confirmation that I was right. Thursday, 31st of August, 1500 UTC for 60 minutes is our next call. And bye for now.
Bye, Cheryl.
Bye, all.
Thanks so much, everyone. Meeting has been adjourned. Have a great day.